Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, dancer, actress, and producer Heather Morris talks about how she ate dinner with a pride of lions in Africa.
All of a sudden, we hear this like extreme rustling, huge rustling, and then a bam against the wired fence, and you hear it vibrate and it like shocks something. And then you hear all the pride of lions like just talking to each other. I have chills right now. I was scared out of my wits, Christine, out of my mind, and everybody was frozen. And the dude with the gun, he walked over and he was like, okay, so a pride of lions just killed a zebra. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of noise.
Today on the show, dancer and actress Heather Morris talks about going to Africa and eating dinner next to a pride of lions. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Heather Morris, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 11 years now, folks, 11 years, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with actress Melanie Chartoff. Melanie, you know, she's an author now as well. She wrote a book, but, you know, her history is just incredible as an actress in Los Angeles, or well, an actress, period. She was at the top of her game in the 1970s and 80s on shows like Newhart, Parker, Lewis Can't Lose, and especially that show Fridays. Do you remember? You're too young for Fridays, Heather, but there was a show called Fridays, which was like a Saturday Night Live.
I remember the title. Yeah.
Yeah, because Michael Richards was in it and Larry David.
Wow.
So, yeah, a lot of talent. And Melanie was on that show. Anyway, she talked about the phenomenon, I always mess that word up, the phenomenon of celebrity, which you've actually had quite an experience with celebrity as well, Heather.
Oh, it's bizarre.
Yeah. And so, you know, Melanie kind of led me and my audience through, you know, going to these red tie events or, you know, like a premiere. And she would wear flats and a trench coat and like a hat pulled down over her eyes till she got from the parking lot or whatever into like a souvenir shop right beside the Man's Chinese Theater. And then she would have a friend with her. She'd take off the jacket. She'd get out of her, you know, her flip flops. And then she'd put on the high heels, take off the hat, primp a little bit. And then, boom, she walks out the other side of the souvenir shop, a celebrity.
How extravagant of her. What an epic, like, journey to leave her car in a trench coat, go into the souvenir shop. I love that.
She just has this way about her. She's a really classy lady. And so go back, you guys. Listen to Melanie Chartoff. She's just a fabulous talent. And her book, Odd Woman Out, actually the cover of the book is her in that trench coat. So it's really funny.
I thought you were going to tell me she would go to the red carpet events in her trench coat. And I was going to say that only makes her more of a celebrity.
Just right.
So cool. She doesn't have to get dressed. I love that.
You know, that reminds me of Frances McDormand, who never wears makeup. And I always thought that was very cool. Very, very cool. Anyway, guys, go back, listen to Melanie last week, but not today. Don't go anywhere today because I'm here with another really interesting talent. And this girl, you guys, she is all of it, right? So not the triple threat. This would be like the quadruple threat. She's a dancer, an actress, a model, and now a producer. And I'm so happy to meet you, Heather. I have to say, Heather Morris, you guys, everybody might know her from a different place. You might know her from Glee. And by the way, I was watching some of your Glee dances, Heather, and really just stunning. You're just stunning. Such a wonderful dancer. And when you watch those clips, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but you know, now do you look at yourself and think like, holy shit, I could dance? Or do you look and think like, what was I doing?
I mean, we're always our worst critic. Obviously, I watch those because I've been dancing my whole life. I've been dancing since I was one, so just a wee babe. And I, of course, watch those. I'm just super proud of myself that I got to do all these epic numbers. But you know, I'm also judging myself at the same time. I'm looking at the bad things I did wrong. And then sometimes I can look at it like I'll watch it with my kids and I'll be so overcome with, I'll just be reminiscent and happy that I got to experience just such a wide range of performances on that show. It was just like, we got to do so much, like over 300 musical numbers. And I was a part of most of those.
That is astonishing. Right. That is astonishing. And all of the dance numbers are really big pop songs. You know, they're all going to be Diana Ross, or it's going to be Journey, or it's going to be, you know, and all pop songs and all fun songs. And you're often on tables. Yes. You're often, you dance on a lot of furniture. There was a lot of people in the cast and you played that role of Brittany, and they almost always had you in the cheerleader outfit. I mean, not always.
We had to advocate second season because we were always so freezing in there. They kept you know, when you're on a set, and for people at home who don't know, they keep those studios frigid, like a freezer, because they want to keep, you know, their attention alive. They want to keep people alert and awake. But we were in these just teeny tiny cheerleader uniforms. And we were so cold, and we had this tight, slick pony that was this very niche, specific thing that Ryan Murphy wanted, where it'd be slicked up in a pony and they'd make one long, we call it a sausage curl. And we'd have a sausage curl in our head, both Naya and I and all the cheerleaders. This was our thing. And by second season, it was so uncomfortable. Could you imagine going in every day for 16 hours and wearing that polyester, like, bathing suit essentially, and there were like grown men on set, and I was just like, we had to try our hardest to just talk to the producers and say like, listen, we need a break. And they did. They gave it to us right away. They let us do, like, we had a storyline where we, you know, quit the Cheerios for a second. It was,
couldn't they give you each a bathrobe? I mean, what's the big deal?
Oh, we did. Of course we did. I mean, offset, yeah, absolutely. But like, while we're shooting, which is majority of the time,
right?
You know, we're still in our uniform and it's not easy to like get off. So we couldn't like take it off in between sets.
So if you guys haven't seen these dance numbers from Glee, let me just set it up for you. There's a lot of people involved for the most part. You know, there might be two or three people that are the leads, but a lot of times it's more than five. Well, it could be five people, but it could also be 20 people. And a lot of times it's a lot of moving parts, like the camera's following you and there are these long shots and you guys are like running through hallways and going into the cafeteria. Okay, I guess after a while, everybody gets really used to that. And that's just the pace of things. But is it ever like you're working with these people and like nobody can get it together? I mean, is it difficult or is it always like, oh, yeah, okay, we got it. One, two, three, go.
I think like by even season two, like the production side of it just 100% had it. It was like ingrained in their head. They knew exactly what they wanted. Same with the directors or even a new director. You know, the DP who probably stayed with us for until season three was always there, always by his side and or her side and just guiding them along the way. And our Steadicam operator, Andrew Mitchell, was just a wizard at holding that camera. So they really, it's funny because I'll go on sets now. I did an episode of Lucifer, and I've done a couple other things as a dancer as well, even recently. And I just want to like go up to them and tell them what they can do and what they can't do and how quickly you can get there. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. You try that, Heather. You go right on up and just say to the DP, let me tell you guys something.
Listen, I know all. I've been there for 6 years. You can trust me.
That is so funny.
No, it's not my place, but.
A lot of these DPs, aren't they? They've got to be on those tracks, right? And then they're getting pulled back because they're going backwards. You guys are dancing toward them. They must be pulling back, right?
Yeah, most of the time if it's a shot, like the West Wing, for example, has just the most incredible Steadicam operator. I don't know who it was, and I wish I knew, but my husband's obsessed with that show. Their shots are, it's Steadicam, so they have them, you know, on a harness around their waist. And they're walking around, and most of the time they're walking backwards, and they have their assistant holding their back and guiding them. And it's like there's also like the focus puller who is following them.
And the person just handling cable.
Yes, exactly. And they go through rooms and doors. And that's kind of how that shot is set up, is with that Steadicam operator, if you're going from room to room. But with our show, if we were performing in the choir room, they would knock out the back wall, and they would put in the dolly track, which mm-hmm. looks like a train track. And
that's
then they have the camera moving back and forth. And it gives it that like really cinematic look.
Yeah, totally. So you're so good on Glee. That must have been really hard when it ended, or were you over it?
Well, I've shared many times over. What my experience was with Glee, I had a really hard time during season 3 mentally. And I've been very open about my experience, and I was so overworked and overwhelmed, and I never spoke up for myself, that by season 3, I kind of had distanced myself anyways. And I had moved out of the city. I started a family. Like I just disconnected. I still did the work. I just wasn't in it. And then by season 4 and 5, once I had my first child and, you know, I was about to get married, I really came back to it and kind of started to find like the friendships and love again. And so by the end, it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, now what? Like, I wasn't necessarily burnt out. I was kind of ready to like, well, this adventure started or stopped. Let's start a new adventure.
Yeah, good for you. You had to grow up. It seems
I had to grow up
kind of fast. Yeah, that's what it really sounds like, Heather. And obviously, this is in part because you have danced your entire life. And I heard you on another show talk about how dancers are treated worse than extras. How can that be?
Worse. I don't understand it. I don't know like where it stems from per se, but just the lack of empathy for these athletes who have been on set for 15 hours on their feet, not getting water breaks, not being told, oh, you can go sit down. Oh, go take a break. There's an expectation for these dancers to stay in for 15 hours straight without breaks. And then, of course, you know, we finally speak up, or I've been on a set where I've had to go say something because it really is time for us to take a 5. And then, of course, you know, like they are like, oh, you know, the AD or whoever is like, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, let's take a break. But just there's no empathy for these athletes, it seems. And it hasn't changed, honestly. Going 20 years ago when we started working on set, or 15 years ago when I started working in LA to now, I mean, minimally, you would hope TikTok would change things because it's like, oh, well, dance and the Masked Dancer. And So You Think You Dance, you think it would change something and have a little bit more of a, I don't know, there's like a understanding for the dance culture, but I just don't think it has.
It seems to me like the dancers need their own wrangler. why yeah. doesn't the dancers have their own, like on the call sheet, why isn't it like dance manager or like, you know, the manager of a football team would make sure that those football players, you know, they sit down, they take a break, they exactly. whatever. And why isn't there like a dance manager who's in, it sounds like they're just not aware.
That's a really good thought. They're not aware. They're putting the pressure on the choreographer. And that in itself is a problem because the choreographer is not only working with the director and everything out and set and props, but they're also, you know, directing these dancers. So there just needs to, I almost think it like, yeah, there needs to be somebody on set who specifically is there to make sure the dancers are taken care of and that there's no mistreatment. And it's not like they're smacking, you know, like they're not whipping people, but like, they just overwork these dancers with an expectation that the dancers will do it again and again and again and never stop.
Wow. 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 It's all very intense to me. My daughter's 14. She has danced her entire life. And like now this summer, she'll dance every day from 9 to 3 teaching little kids, but she's still in the environment, you know? And yeah. I like her in there because she's out of the sun. I feel like it's not near a pool. It sounds relatively safe to me. But I don't want her to be so consumed that she'll let herself get treated like a robot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a double standard too, because when you're in that position, you don't want to be difficult to work with, right? You're almost scared to say something. But usually, I mean, most of the time now I'm at the point where, and you get to an age where you're like, I have to say something. This is mistreatment. I can't throw out my back for this job. You know, I can't
right.
lose the rest of my career because right. I danced on concrete for 10 hours.
Oh my God. Oh, that sounds so horrific. But again, how can a 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 year old even possibly say those words, you know, because exactly. they're terrified. They're going to get cut.
They're like, I need to pay my rent. You know, all of it.
All right. So today you bring forth the topic. I ate dinner with a pride of lions in Africa. So I definitely want to get to that story. But before we do, two more things. One thing is my daughter and I love Dancing with the Stars. It's just something she and I have done since she was little. We made up our own cards. We hold up our numbers. You know, we think it's really fun. We were in love with Erin Andrews. We really liked her. One of the hosts, and you were on the show. Now, here's what when I told her I was talking to you today, she laughed because we remember the episode exactly when you and your partner on the show got perfect tens, the best dance of the night. You're at the top of the leaderboard and they cut you. What is happening?
I don't know. You know what? I don't know, Christine. I don't know. I always wonder. I was there for the right reasons, right? Like, but necessarily, it's hard to show an audience. I guess in my perspective, like, I'm so competitive, and I was so in the mindset that I'm here to like learn, and this is like a class, that I lost the focus on that it's an actual show, and people want a story, and they want to get to know you. So I just didn't show the people really the side of me that they needed in order to advocate for me. I was just like, I am going to be a ballroom dancer. I'm going to be a ballroom dancer here, right? Because I'm so competitive. And ballroom dancing is the most difficult thing, which mm-hmm. most people didn't know. Mm-hmm. Nothing like what I've learned in my mm-hmm. life. So I just didn't show the audience that they needed to be on my side. They just assumed, okay, well, she's a dancer. She's fine. Right.
Well, the thing is the show is set up. It's just so goofy. I mean, they had that guy, Sean, you know, the freaking press secretary, whatever his name was, you know, Trump's idiot press secretary was on the show and he lasted like 8 weeks or what, and he couldn't dance. I mean, he wasn't a dancer whatsoever. And they left him on because people were tuning in to watch him. Same yeah. as the Tiger King lady. Yeah. You know, the Tiger King lady was on, Carol Baskin. Well, yes. She can't dance, but they're putting her in. They're putting her in leopard skin. Well, they put her in leopard outfits, and then they had to do these promos where she'd growl at the camera. And it's like, oh, I am so in. It's not even funny.
No.
Yes. Yes, it was fabulous. So there's no way they're going to cut. Or I remember Marla Maples was in one of Donald Trump's, one of his wives. So there's no way they're going to cut these people that are so interesting.
Yeah.
To watch, you know, and so I hear what you're saying. You're thinking, technically, I want to learn to be a ballroom dancer. I've never done this before. I've got to forget everything I've learned. I got to pay attention and listen and then do that.
Yeah. And then when they tell you, like,
you screwed up.
Right. And then when they tell you, dude, like, okay, well, I want this to happen here or say this here. Of course I'm going to say that. Yeah, I'm going to do my job. I'm going to show up and I'm going to say what you want me to say. But I was not opening my heart up to the audience. I wasn't giving people a sneak peek into my life, and that's what they need.
You didn't cry?
I cried.
Oh.
Happy. I cried happy tears.
Oh, okay.
All these people at one point, it was like this emotional episode and everybody had an emotional story. And I chose to talk about my wedding day, and that was the happiest day of my life and how important it was. So it was like happy tears and it was so sweet. So those were my only, tears
you needed, being shed. You needed to pass out, sprain an ankle.
Yes. Yes. God did not let me throw out my back, although I throw out my back all other days, just not on the show. God.
If you broke up with your fiance, that might have made something.
It'd be a big deal.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm so excited to hear your story today. I ate dinner with the Pride of Lions in Africa, especially because I am obsessed with Africa. On Twitter, I follow Kruger Sightings, which is all about Kruger National Park over there. And so I'll spend like a half hour on Twitter just watching kills.
Stop it.
I swear, I love it.
Have
so
you been?
Much. No, I've never been. And I've been many, many places in the world, but for some reason I haven't gotten to Africa yet, which is definitely on my bucket list. And I know with the title of your story, I Ate Dinner with the Pride of Lions in Africa, I know this is going to be good. So let's get over to your story. But before we do, I wanted to remind you guys that we are still playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show, every Friday night on Facebook and YouTube Live. It starts at 7 o'clock Pacific time. Blank Patch, Danny Zucker, everybody's here. We're having a blast. But the show is going to be ending on June 25th. June 25th is the last show until I come up with another brilliant idea, which you know I will, because I always do. There, I said it. All right, listen, you guys, today we are here with Heather Morris. Like I said, she's a dancer and an actress, a singer and a model, and she's best known for that role as Brittany Pierce on the comedy drama series Glee. Now, Heather, you've also done so many other shows. You've been doing this your whole life. You've danced on commercials. You were on So You Think You Can Dance. You danced with Beyonce in that Single Ladies video, and you had that one move where you put the ring on it, the kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you've had performances on Saturday Night Live, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, Today, the American Music Awards, and you've also danced back up like I said, for Beyonce and Tina Turner at the 50th Annual Grammy Awards. So you've had these fantastic experiences, and you've been on magazines like Fitness. And then, of course, like we talked about in Dancing with the Stars, you have a terrific, exciting career going on. And now you're producing a new podcast called The Bystanders on the Believe Network, B-L-E-A-V, The Bystanders, starring Kristen Chenoweth and Jane Lynch. You're on the show as well. It's called The Bystanders. You guys, you're going to have to check it out and find Heather over on Twitter at Heather Morris TV. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Heather Morris.
So, yes, I ate dinner with a Pride of Lions in Africa. And so I'm an advocate for wildlife conservation. I have been for a while. I work with this company called IFAW, and we just work with conservation, essentially, and keeping animals thriving all across the world. So I finally got this chance to take a trip to Africa, which I have been wanting for my entire life. I had gone to Ethiopia on tour with Beyonce and just had an unworldly experience, otherworldly experience. That's the right word. There, I just felt so welcome there, and I wanted to go back ever since. That was like 15 years ago. So my husband and I plan a trip for my 31st birthday to go there with IFA, and they'll have a guide with us the whole time. We'll get to see two different types of agriculture and two different types of, like, you know, what are they called? Like, one's like a savanna and the other one's like the bush, the deep bush of Africa. Two different types of places. So the first one, we go outside of Nairobi and we stay at this hotel. And it's, when you show up to the hotel, you drive about an hour away from the city and then, you know, you're in wildlife, right? And when you pull up to the hotel, there's this huge wired fence outside, right? Just to keep you safe and keep you in, because you're in the middle of Africa, in the middle of wildlife. So about the second night in, after we have done our safaris, we were out all day. It was my birthday night dinner.
Well, tell me more about, real quick, if you could, the safaris. So what? Okay. So like, okay, the first night, and then you wake up in the morning. Can you tell me what that looks like?
So yeah, when you're waking up about 6 a.m. every morning, and you're going out on safari. So your guide will come pick you up in a Jeep, obviously the big old Jeeps, the safari Jeeps you see. You go and get yourself ready at about 6 a.m. and you want to do like the sunrise safari tours, right? So you get in this big old Jeep and you're off on these trails following all maybe 100 of different like Jeeps. There's like so many of these Jeeps out doing these safaris. And so once you're even outside of the hotel, there is just zebras and wildlife and animals. It's everywhere. So you're inside of their territory. You're inside their house, right? This is their home and we're just visitors. So even right outside the hotel is like a pack of zebras. And then you go down the road and there's a pride of lions. So we have to stop on the road and like wait for them to move. And
okay, now wait, is the Jeep covered and who has a gun? I mean, what's the safety here?
Yes. Yes. So our tour guide, his name is George. Love George. He has a gun. You're inside a fully enclosed Jeep. It's not like the open Jeep Wrangler, right? It's like a Land Rover type vehicle, an off-roading vehicle. So sorry to confuse you all. I'm using a general term for Jeep. She's like, wait, are you safe? How are you alive? Oh no, I was terrified. Windows were up the whole time. I was too scared. So yeah, it's like you're just driving miles and miles of this open land and seeing wild boars, elephants thriving everywhere. You know, sadly, the giraffe numbers have declined. And so that was really hard to see because I was so excited to see the giraffe. And I only saw, I want to say, about 11 giraffe. And it was just, it was devastating.
Were they together?
Unbelievable. They were together. Yeah, there was a couple like we would just see randomly. But I was like, oh, you know, I haven't seen a giraffe in a while. And they had to actually find a group of giraffe. They have their little walkie-talkies that they communicate with the other drivers. Everybody's like kind of keeping in touch. And like they'll tell you, oh, there is some cheetahs over here. So we'll go scout out some cheetahs. And just always in keeping communication so that the people can experience it.
Well, Heather, this is why I'm on the Kruger National Park Twitter, because they'll tell you cheetah on the move, half mile past Crocodile Bridge or whatever. Or they'll take 10 kilometers. Yeah, it's because, of course, it's metric. And you can see, and I always think like, oh my God, they know where the giraffe is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then everybody drives to that spot and then everybody parks together and you stop the car and you sit there and wait. We actually had a cheetah. There was a family of a mom and two baby cheetahs that were hunting that day that we saw. And we stopped, we parked the car. They were all just like laying around and they actually they actually like walked over to the side of our vehicle. My heart was beating so fast, to the side of our vehicle, and laid down right next to my door, just laying there. And there's a little sunroof you can open. And I was like, we have to fucking close the sunroof. I'm so terrified. They're going to jump in the car and they're going to jump in here and kill me. Cause it was just laying there. It was harmless.
Because it was shaded.
It was shaded. Exactly. It was just shaded. So he was just chilling. He was hanging out.
And then the car has to sit, your Jeep has to sit there till that animal moves. Is that true?
George would, if he wanted to, he would start the car and it would scare the cheetahs.
I see.
Yeah. They're so used to all these tourists all the time that they really aren't fazed by it. It's no big deal.
Are the other Jeeps, is it obnoxious?
It is, because they're like aggressive. So they're like competing for the best shot. So like you'll be sitting watching this epic like National Geo scenario in front of your eyes. And then all of a sudden another Jeep will pull up right in front of you because they want to get a better shot. Or you know, they want their guests to get the best picture, which was astounding because you're like, so we're all watching wildlife here. And this is like this is God's land we're chilling on. Like, can't you just hang out for a second?
That's just so gross to me.
It was so gross. Know? There was cool guides like ours. George was cool. There was cool guides that like they were friends with, that George was friends with. And then there was not so cool guys.
So it's its own sort of word?
Like Disneyland, essentially.
Yeah.
But tourist guides and stuff.
I'm just saying, like, so then what's the species over top of that who's watching the tour guides, who are watching the animals, who are, you know what I mean? Like, there's a whole, because these that's what it is. Okay. So are you comfortable in the Jeep, by the way? Is it comfortable or not?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's bumpy because you're going off-roading, but it was great. Okay. George took us out on
a late night safari moonlight.
Yeah, it's like a moonlight where they take you out and they park and they set up a little picnic for you. So you're like out in the wild, not in the wild. There's no animals around, but they like park and they crack you open a beer and they'll hand you like a snack and you get to watch the sunset and stuff like that. So that was beautiful as well. But the story that I'm about to tell you is a night where we were staying in the hotel, and the hotel had planned for my husband and I and George and our guest, they call him liaison. Her name was Pam, who knew everything about everything there. And so they had planned this dinner for us, and they called it Dinner in the Bush. And so you're still inside the wired fencing enclosure of the hotel, but you're still outside, right? And there's this, when you get down, you walk down this pathway and you get to where the dinner was at, and there's this big like canopy above you to kind of still keep you protected, but it's open, but it's a canopy. And then you have this giant wired fence, right? And there's also these dudes, right, that like protect the land, and they have these giant guns and they're like keeping a watch out because you don't know what's going to happen out there. So I felt a little bit more safe that they were there. And they like listen for stuff and they'll report in. So I was also just like shitting my pants before this, because I was like, we're having dinner outside in the middle of Africa. I don't care that there's a wired fence. Like, I'm going to die tonight. There's going to be a leopard who's hanging out above us and he's going to attack us. Like a full George in the Jungle thing.
Yeah, but it was my birthday. A wire fence doesn't seem that threatening, to tell you the truth.
No, it doesn't. But they assured us we were fine, cracked us a beer. We had dinner. I couldn't even drink, cause I was like, if something happens, I have to be alert. So before any of this happens, Pam is telling us a story about how, I said, do you have any crazy stories about Africa, or you've done this a long time? Can you tell us any stories? And she was like, she told us this terrifying story while we're in the middle of the bush about like a lion who basically broke in the middle of a dinner she was having I can't remember the details, but scared the shit out of me.
What the fuck? Yeah.
I was like, you can't tell me that while we're about to eat dinner in the bush. No. And I guess the lion did go away. It didn't want to hurt anybody, but it like jumped in the middle of their dinner and everybody froze and freaked out. And then it like went away. Or it made a kill. That's what it was. Lo and behold, maybe not even 10 minutes after she told us this story. All right. We hear some like rustling outside of the bushes. And there was this running and sounds and animals, and you can't quite tell what animals what. It sounded like just like lions and things. And so those dudes with the guns were reporting to us what was going on. And they're like, yeah, there's a pride of lions, and they're running, they're trying to make a kill. They're talking to each other. All of a sudden, we hear this like extreme rustling, huge rustling, and then a bam against the wired fence, and you hear it vibrate and it like shocks something. And then you hear all the pride of lions like just talking to each other. I have chills right now. I was scared out of my wits, Christine, out of my mind, and everybody was frozen. And the dude with the gun, I'm just going to call him that because I don't know what else to call him. He was like, he walked over and he was like, okay, so a pride of lions just killed a zebra. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of noise. they had just killed a zebra right next to us on the outside of the wire fence.
God.
So they were chowing down on this zebra and eating a zebra whilst we were eating our dinner right next door.
What did it sound like?
They were just like mad at each other, like, don't take my food, don't take my food. And I didn't hear like chomping.
That's thank disgusting. God.
I didn't hear any of that, but I just.
Do they pull it apart? Is that, I guess
they fight over it. They can drag it away. Or, you know, mostly it's the women, you know, that do the hunt.
Is that right?
And they kill.
I didn't
it's
know that.
Usually the females that do the hunting. They mm-hmm. hunt in a pack. And then I guess we heard the big, huge roar. So the male lion had come on and tried to take over. And usually they do. They'll like eat as much as they can. can you?
They'll eat as much as they want. And then the other
exactly.
women.
Exactly. They'll eat as much as they want. And then they leave. The women try and come in.
And so yeah. When did you go? What were you eating, by the way? Not zebra.
I was not eating zebra. I can't even recall. I don't even think I
by
was.
By the way, do zebras make any sounds?
Not as loud as like a horse. They don't make like a meow, but like, you know, they make like some like weird smaller something. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really remember.
I just think this is so fascinating. Yeah, I bet. And then when you're done with your meal, you get back up, you go into your room or whatever.
Like nothing happened.
Like nothing. And then how many more days did you do safari? Like if you're in Africa, tell me what to do when I go to Africa. First of all, I think I want to go to that hotel that you were at.
Yes. I'll have to find the name and I'll get it to you.
What do you recommend when people go over there? I mean, just personally, you know, would you say like, okay, a week and you're done, or what?
I would say a week for sure, because it's so exciting every single day that you wake up to see something new and see something different. And like the guides will tell you, what you'll see today, you absolutely won't see tomorrow. Everything's different. It's constantly, you know, it's like a search and find. You're on the prowl all day long. Yeah, I would say a full week, and try and go to the two different terrains. There's like the desert terrain where it's all open. It reminds you of the Lion King, and it's this big open pride land, really spread out. And then there's the bush, which is much further. I believe it's north.
Were you in the Serengeti? Where were you?
No, we were outside of Nairobi.
Oh, okay. And what's the name of the park?
Oh, I should know this before I even look.
Because my sister was telling me that when she went on safari, there was so much driving before they got to see an animal. Like they'd drive for 4 or 5 hours and then they got to where the animals were. They had, and she was in the Serengeti.
No, we were in Kenya.
Uh-huh.
Out an hour outside of Nairobi. Let me try and find.
Would you go back to Africa, Heather?
I would go back in a second.
No kidding.
In a heartbeat. So Serengeti is, okay. So that's Tanzania. Oh, okay. So we went to Tsavo National Park.
Okay.
Which is just over the border of Tanzania, Mount Kilimanjaro National Park. We were right next to Mount Kilimanjaro. So we were on Tsavo West National Park, which is on the southeast side.
I had a girl on the show once who hiked Mount Kilimanjaro, and it was she is so funny. She was one of the funniest stories I've ever heard because she's such a knucklehead. She didn't prepare. She didn't know. Well, she knew, but she just
you can't
pretended
do that.
Not
it's
to
a waste
know
of money
about what this took. Right, what this took. Right, and people were just dropping like flies all gosh around her because it's challenging.
It's like a life choice.
But she did get through, and yes, that's exactly right. Speaking of names, I can't think of her name right this second. It'll come to me, but I'd love to recommend folks to go back and listen because boy, oh boy, it's funny stuff, man. She's, just
a go-getter.
Yeah, it's just it's a whole nother thing. But listen, you are so fun to talk to, Heather Morris, and you're so talented. I'm really impressed by how you went from in front of the camera to now behind the camera and putting together something like The Bystanders. You know, this isn't easy. I know it because I've been in podcasting for so long. All of it is difficult. And I listened to a few episodes and you've got such tremendous production value in the show. I'm really happy for you there.
Yeah, we just got lucky. We have our producer, our sound engineer, Alex Carter, is one of the best. He's just, I mean, we just got so lucky that he's a part of our team.
I worked with him.
Oh, you
just
did.
Call him Carter, right?
You just, yeah, call, you him just Carter, call him Carter, right? Right? Yeah, but I know his like work name is Alex Carter.
Yeah, he helped me quite a bit actually, and I sent him some swag. I think he's in Tennessee.
He's in Tennessee,
I don't know
yeah.
Yeah, I sent him some swag and he got back to me and he was so happy. He's like, oh, people tell me they'll do this all the time and they don't do it.
He's
but
the
he helped
human
me so much.
Sweetest
he
human
helped me within minutes. He got on, you know, it's one of those things where he can get onto your computer
exactly
and then he just fixes all my levels like, da, 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 da. And I'm like,
that,
thanks, Carter.
That proved
amazing guy.
It proved so to be the most helpful. It was the most valuable for our production because our actors – that was probably the most scary for them was like getting on a Zoom and recording their sessions and then having to send them because we couldn't get together. It was in quarantine. So we couldn't be physical and face to face. So everything had to go over Zoom recordings. We sent them microphones. And so Carter got on every session and he just took over their computer, like you said, and they were in the best hands.
Tremendous. Really. Congratulations on The Bystanders. You guys go over and listen to The Bystanders. Well, really anywhere you hear podcasts, but also you can always head over to thebystanderspodcast.com. Yes. And Heather, I know you have so much ahead of you and I hope we get to work together sometime.
Of course. I'm so appreciative you had me on your show. This is great.
It was super fun. Oh, by the way, congratulations on your two little boys. How adorable.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they're not so little. They're pretty big. My 7-year-old is the size of a 10-year-old.
Yeah, but still, those are babies. When you have two boys, do you just kind of give it up and say, okay, there's no sense in cleaning this house. What's the point?
Well, here's a tip for all you mothers out there. I learned from my husband's mom, she waits until the evening when the boys are asleep. So yes, make sure your kids clean up after themselves, right? You always want to be like, well, you know, go clean up this mess and this
their
mess,
area.
And whatever,
yeah.
Their area.
But you can't say go do the laundry to a 7-year-old.
And it's worthless to try and like sweep up all the like Cheerios and like waffles they dropped on their seats in the middle of the day because then they just come back an hour later and do the same thing. So always wait until the end of the night when you are not dead tired and falling asleep. But like just one or two nights a week, I'm like, okay, I'm going to clean this house now. So then I wake up and I feel like I just got a facelift. I'm like, this is the best day ever.
Oh, Heather, those boys are so lucky to have you as a mommy. I bet you're such a good mom.
No, thanks. I appreciate it sometimes.
That's really neat. That's really neat. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Heather Morris. Follow her over there on Twitter at Heather Morris TV. And then, of course, drop me a line over there as well at Storyworthy. So thank you so much again, Heather. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Christine.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.